This is Payments Ground Game, where we go under the operational hood of payments ISOs. Let's take a deep dive into the tactics you can use to strategically scale performance and your bottom line.
Hey, everyone. Welcome again to Payments Ground Game with Kevin and Elena Smith from Secure Bank Card. Today, we are going to introduce everyone to our new CTO. He's been with us for about a year in a consulting role, and we finally convinced him to come over full time. His name is Billy Boozer, and Billy is probably one of the most interesting people you'll meet, if not one of the more intelligent people that I've met. And we're excited to have Billy on with us today.
Yeah, super excited to be here. This is an awesome opportunity at Secure Bank Card, and I'm really excited to be working on the technology you guys have been crafting over the last few years to help solve so many great payments problems.
Billy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of some of the, just give us an overview of the types of things that you've worked on before. And then we'll get into maybe a little bit about how we met and how we started working together. I think that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. So over the last 10 years or so, I've owned a software consultancy where I build software for large enterprises. And that's always varied between pieces of software that are mobile applications or marketing software or even marketing pages. And I ended up really finding an inclination to build application level software. So things that people use every day as opposed to things that people use incrementally or ephemerally for marketing situations. And so started building out different pieces of software that either solve problems in the markets that I was working in, or I had people come to me and ask, you know, is there anything for something, and start building it. And over the last 10 years or 15 years or so, I've had the opportunity to build a bunch of really interesting things, from ACH payment gateways to mobile applications for large brands like NASCAR, and then also e-commerce software, and then most recently some social networking software. And each one of those experiences taught me a lot, not just about that specific industry that we were working in, but best practices for software, how to manage teams, and then how to make a project or business successful with their technology. It really gave me a passion for building things as opposed to maintaining things or being a small part of a team. I really enjoyed the crafting of the entire experience or the solution for a business. And so I just kept building a bunch of software, and I found this to be the most empowering industry that I've ever been a part of. I used to work in the nuclear services industry, and this is much funner, lots more fun.
Everybody gets the payments bug. But one of the things that I like about your perspective is that you always bring it back to the user experience. And sometimes that can be challenging when you're talking to technical people. It's more about what they're building rather than thinking about the process. And for us, we're so operationally minded. It has to come back to the process, and our users have to have a great experience. And that's why I think that we just instantly clicked, because we were on the same page with that. If the user doesn't have a great experience, there's no point in building it for them.
I was going to say, the other thing that's kind of fun is, you know, Billy can speak to us, to Elena and Kevin, and he doesn't speak to us in the manner in which I call it the peanuts environment, where you're in the group and you're speaking to the technical guys, and the technical guys are talking back, and all we hear is wah, 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 wah. I think one of the things that we hit it off pretty quickly and easily with you was, you know, you understood what we were saying, which may not have always had the correct technical jargon with it, but we're able to take that technical or take that non-technical conversation and convert it into an actual discussion with techies that involved yourself and them, and maybe not us, but communicated what we were looking for correctly.
Yeah, I think that comes down to, and Elena and Kevin, you both hit it right on the head, is I like to talk about this in abstract terms at times. It's basically called like a common language, right? And a lot of people will only have one common language. When, especially on the technical side, what you see is people having conversations in kind of the native way that they would speak with their other technical team members. And it's generally devoid of the understanding that these technical solutions all roll up to business problems that are being solved. And over the years, my role has always been to be, I would say, somewhat of an interpreter between the needs of a business and the technical tools that we would use to solve those needs. It's always led me down a road of being more product oriented, but because I have a pretty deep technical background, it served me very well with my technical teams that I lead typically, because again, there's no loss of communication. Everything's fairly efficient. We're not always trying to interpret what someone else is saying, because typically I'm the person that's the arbiter between those things. And I understand that business problem and how that maps directly to the technology that's solving it. And so, you know, typically it just comes down to, for me, having conversations at a high frequency with the business team, even though, you know, I'm typically providing the technical solution, so that not only I understand, you know, the nuts and bolts of how something is done, but why we're actually doing what we're doing within the business that generates positive metrics for, you know, Secure Bank Card or any business I've ever worked with.
And I will say it is a lot of fun because, hey, you got into this. We met about a year ago. After we met, we started working together a little bit. It was, we were kind of slowly getting to know each other. And I will say that you and Elena have been both exceptional at picking the details up behind this business coming from outside. Elena having the accounting background and the, you know, the mathematics background, you with the technical background, but the speed at which both of you, not that you didn't understand the business, you understood the business, but the specifics and the technology behind it and why we're using the technology to do what we're doing. Both of you were able to pick that up. I mean, it was amazing to me. I've been doing this 30 damn years. So it was exciting to watch you as you know, it's kind of like your aha moments to see in those conversations where you'd have that aha moment.
What I always find interesting in things like this is the 80-20 rule. So, you know, it takes 20% of the time to get 80% of the breadth of something. But then really it takes 80% of the time to finish and refine that 20% that really differentiates you between the average product or the average solution to the solution that really solves a problem. And I feel like I'm still in this like 80%, you know, drinking from a fire hose situation. But what has been nice is you guys set a framework or kind of a foundation with what you're doing with Secure and Pioneer. And because I understand software well enough, I can map a lot of these things to the conversations that we have and then see the implications of those on the iterations in which we see those implications daily. Helps to learn really, really fast, helps to compress that time frame of trying to figure out how to solve these types of problems and see how these problems actually affect the business. I think that that's probably, you know, that in y'all's mentorship has been the thing that's led me to a better understanding of this industry as quickly as possible. And funny enough, there's an anecdote that I always use when I talk about my development career. There was this one opportunity that I had to go work with there was somebody going on sabbatical in an organization that I was going to go work with or interview with. And he was going on sabbatical for about 3 weeks and they needed somebody to step in to do some Ruby on Rails development. And during that time, I got accepted for that position and showed up, and there's three or four engineers in a room we used to call the fishbowl. And the fishbowl was, it had two walls on one side and then one curved wall on the other side. And the curved wall on the backside was just glass. And typically we were all kind of lined up on that outside wall, but sitting very close to each other, no partitions between us or anything like that. And during that 3 weeks, 4 weeks of that person's sabbatical, I learned so much from just the people around me that were willing to share that information and were all experts in the things that they did. And after that, you know, three or four weeks engagement, I ended up going on and working with that business for a long time. It was almost kind of like a test period to work with them. But what was great about it was for the next 12 months, I get to sit beside people that were absolutely the best people possible for one, teaching, and two, actually being experts at what they did. And it's like a cheat code. I mean, having someone that's an expert in your midst in an industry or in a technology, or in anything for that matter, will level up your knowledge so much faster than if you were trying to incrementally, you know, reach out and grab it yourself, or you're around a bunch of B and C players that really don't understand the business as much as they do maybe an aspect of the business. So I'm super thankful for it, and I'm really glad to be around you and Elena, and, you know, continue to steal as much knowledge as I can about payments from you.
And it's gone both ways is the thing that I love. If we back up, you know, a year ago, we met on LinkedIn, which is not a surprise given that I spend as much time as I do on LinkedIn. But this is the kind of thing that I think that people don't understand that you can get out of networking on LinkedIn if you go in with a giving attitude. So we met on LinkedIn, you reached out. I think you used some kind of automated reach out tool, but it didn't look like an automated reach out tool. We won't hold that against you.
Elena's trying to say that she got. Elaine's trying to say that you hoodwinked her, but
yes, hoodwinked a bit.
Got hoodwinked.
Only a little bit of bamboozled. It's okay.
Well, I selected you personally to reach out. That's
okay. But you said an automated message. All right. I feel a little better now. But anyways, we connected on LinkedIn. Come to find out, you live right around the corner from us, you know, 20 minutes away or something from our office. And we started just chatting about you were working on a payments product at the time, or an app that had integrated payments, and you were finding some struggle in that. And there was an upcoming show, and I think you just asked if I was going to be at the show. And we just started our conversation that way. We had a little networking call. And we said, hey, do you want to, you know, are you having some trouble with payments? You want to learn about what's required in underwriting? Do you want to learn about, you know, why integrations like this have a hard time integrating with the bigger ones like Stripe and whatnot? Come on in. Let's like spend a couple hours together and let's, you know, teach you what we know. And on the same side of that, you were willing to help us. Hey, we're having these developmental struggles. Is this normal? We don't have, you know, we're not tech people. Is this a normal experience for us to be going through when we have an offshore development team that we're trying to manage and get these projects done? And it was very two-sided. And we were just willing to be open with each other and help each other without being fearful of giving away the keys to the kingdom. Because you and I both know, you can share as much as you want to with me. I can't go build what you've built by you sharing that with me. On the flip side, I can share as much payments knowledge as I can. It's very hard for you to just pick up and go rebuild Pioneer, just knowing what you know without looking at the code.
Oh, yeah.
So we built trust immediately by being so open with each other. And I think this is the thing that gets lost on people with networking, is that they go in with a give me, give me, give me mentality. And when you go in and you offer to give, there's so much more to be gained when you go in with that approach.
You can't learn that it's just math if you don't have enough ass in your pants.
There we go. No, I mean, you know, and I think funny enough, I've during that time, I was seeking out some mentorship. And I was building a piece of software for home service providers to manage their business and take payments for invoices. And when I was building that, I realized that I had a deficit in my understanding of exactly how payments worked and the options that existed for payment providers. And the means in which you could actually make money off of your payments. And so I'd reached out to you and probably maybe another 15 people or so, and had some really good conversations. But our conversation resonated so well because honestly, when I had my first chat with you, Elena, I was just so impressed by your depth of knowledge within this industry. And the other thing was, I was honestly a little bit intimidated by it because, you know, it's I built things in financial services. I built ACH gateways that move, you know, in the billions of dollars every year. And you guys understood payments at such a detailed, nuanced level that you would say things that I'm like, I don't even know if I've heard of that before, you know? And I've engaged with all these services. I've built on top of them. I've even abstracted some of these services. But then understanding those underlying details was a completely different thing. And so, like I said, at the time, I was searching out for some mentoring. And every time I'd come up to somebody, you know, it really felt like more of a pull situation. Like, you know, I was going to end up being the teacher or the mentor at a higher frequency than I would be the mentee, you know? And what I appreciated about the first few weeks of our engagement was I felt like I was learning a disproportionate amount to what you guys were learning from me. And I think that's correct from the first few weeks. And then once we started having conversations about the technology issues that you guys were running into and the opportunities that existed within the software that you had already developed with just the intrinsic knowledge you already had, not the technical skills, but just the intrinsic knowledge that you had about this industry, it became somewhat of a reciprocating relationship. And I consider you guys mentors, truly more than, I guess, what do you call this? People on the same level. Like, I consider you mentors in this scenario still. And what I'm excited about is, you know, the things that you've been able to build without good technology help and partnership. What can you do with great technology help and partnership? Because I'm not one to kind of like, you know, have a big ego about this, but I absolutely love what I do. Like, I think it has empowered me. It's given me the opportunities that I never thought I'd have in life. And so, you know, I'm proud of it. I enjoy it. And I love when I have the opportunity to work with a team that is just as motivated on the business side as they are on the technology side.
So you started consulting for us as you saw opportunities for us. We kind of shared some challenges with you, and you started consulting with us and saying, hey, we really need to look at this habit that we have in, let's say, change management. And this is what I would expect to see. Instead, we're seeing this. You helped us implement some controls over that so that we felt, I mean, we've worked hard to build this and we didn't have as much control as we should have over it. You really helped us with that. And it just made sense for us to get deeper and deeper and deeper into you helping us more and more. And it became, you know, what you helped us do the cleanup part of it. And now we're at the exciting part of it where we're, okay, now we've got it all straightened up and it's time to see what the opportunities are. How do we take this little platform that Kevin and Elena have, you know, dreamed up, and, you know, it's maybe down here as a little like flowering bud right now. And how do we take it to the next level and make it into an entire garden? And that's kind of the place that you are right now, helping us see that to fruition. And I think we couldn't have done that if you don't come full time with us. Yeah. And I think that's why it made sense for you to come full time with us, because you can't do that in a consulting role. You're never going to be all in enough to do that. And so we're just thrilled to have you on board with us. And it's exciting for us that somebody sees the potential that we do in this thing, because that's not always the case. Because you've understood the business case for it so quickly, you see the opportunity. And then you're excited and fired up to go help us bring this to market more than we have, because we've only touched a tiny sliver of what's available there. And there's a lot more opportunity out there.
Yeah, when I see what I see in the market in the payment space, and I see what people are willing to bear through, and then I also see the successful products and the differentiation between a successful product and one that you may use on a daily basis, but given a better alternative, you would switch to it. I see that there's a disproportionate amount of those products that people would leave behind given a better product within the payments industry.
And that's one of the interesting things I think about ETA is we had so many conversations that you picked up immediately on there's a handful of products out there that everybody uses and everybody complains about them equally. No one is in love with it so much that they're out saying they love it. They are usually unhappy with it, but they continue to tolerate it because there's not a better solution. And that's, it's not just one, it's, there's are multiple products out there like that. So it was great to have you as part of those conversations, because we're not, this isn't our perspective. This is the perspective of everybody else in the industry. So you got a real sense for the dissatisfaction in our industry with the existing tools and the opportunity there is to replace it with something better.
Those conversations were with customers too. And those are the best conversations, because those customers or even potential customers that come to you and say, man, I just can't stand working another day with this solution. This is not the solution that their customers are asking for. It's not the functionality that their customers are asking for, but they feel boxed in. You know, they feel like there's no other options. And what they don't realize is we have some pretty amazing options for what we're doing. And there's only upside in what has been built so far at Pioneer and Secure Bank Card. Those tools, given a bit of refinement from my perspective, will be first in class and already first in class functionally tools, but tools that you want to work in every single day, that you're happy to come and use. I mean, I think this is a great example on the consumer side of what we've seen with Square and a couple of other POSs like that. What they did was they focused on that end user experience and said, okay, how do we make that the best workflow possible? And so what they said was, we think that if we can get your customers to love the process of engaging with us, then we can get you to continue to use our software. Well, I think the other side of that is if you and your customers are going to love working in this software, they're going to continue to use that software, and we can continue to have great conversations with them because they want to see that software succeed and be the tool that they want it to be or wish it will be in the market. And so I think that's one of the things that we came out of ETA with, was the idea that our goal has to be to create client and customer advocates for us. And the way we do that is by building great products and by having amazing service. And I think that's really where we're poised to really, you know, do great in the payments industry, is because we already have great service and we already have a great product. It can only go up from this point. And I'm super excited about it. It's like I said, I talk about it in the blessing sense, but it's a blessing to be working with you guys.
Well, it's always fun to watch when someone gets that first introduction. Billy, you and I had gone to a couple of different shows already. And we've kind of talked to some people and looked around here and looked around there. But I think this was the first show where you were like the kid in a candy store. And you're looking around and you're like trying to compare what we do compared to what somebody else does. And you're coming back, do you guys realize that, hey, this over here, but, and it looks good, but man, everybody I talk to that uses it doesn't like it. We're not going to name any names, but but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and coming back in. It's always fun when we get when I have an interaction with somebody and I say, this is what we do and this is why we do it. And this is what we built to meet that dream and to get, you know, to push us in that direction. And the first question that we always get is the normal question of, well, who is your competitor? How does your competitor do it? I think kind of the reaction we got from you the first time, we said, well, we really, there's not anybody that's really doing what we do. Mm-hmm. There's not anybody that's really doing it. And we got that same reaction from you that I'm going to be honest, we got from a lot of others, which is, yeah, you're full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of blind for the forest. There's other competitors out there that you don't realize. And to have you come back afterwards after ETA go, wow, I think we really do have something that is a differentiator from everyone else.
Yeah.
That is completely different than everyone else. And also to watch you, that sometimes Elena and I, we can't see the forest for the trees. We really can't. We get so ingrained in what we're doing. We're so heads down. We're so much in the weeds that, you know, there's things that we miss that, quite honestly, any normal person is going to see. We just don't see it because we're so engulfed in what we're doing. And for you to come in and kind of be those eyes and ears for us, knowing and understanding what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish, and coming back and saying, hey, we're going in the right direction for this. We need to probably adjust the direction for this. Hmm. We need to probably relook at how we're doing this. I you hear me all the time say, damn it, just because we did it this way yesterday does not mean that's how we need to do it tomorrow.
Fresh eyes matter. Like, there's no doubt about that. Fresh eyes that already have an understanding of an industry a bit and then can get exposed to the knowledge you guys have exposed me to, it helps to give you perspective on, you know, it's my favorite part about Secure Bank Card is that we're all about operational efficiency. And because we're about operational efficiency, we build those things into the software that we develop. And what I love is that coming in with fresh eyes, being able to see a different perspective, allows me to also help you guys overlay the best technology tools possible for what you guys are working on. Again, I think it's very complementary. I think it works out really, really well. But, you know, like we saw at ETA, there was a lot of software that wished they could do some of the things that they would like to do. They can't do, you know, there's a yep. little bit of vaporware that you run into there, that there's people that are kind of pitching their ideas, not necessarily pitching the execution. And to your point a minute ago, I mean, you guys are heads down because you're executing and you see the success of the execution every day. I mean, I think it's the right thing to do, but, you know, I think what you guys have recognized a bit is that, you know, while you guys are heads down executing, somebody's got to also be looking at somewhere where the ball's going on these things, especially on the technology side. I think you guys are always looking for where the ball's going on the business side of payments. But I think it's important to be able to do that because we're not moving away from technology. This is not like a Luddite pullback or anything like that. Technology is moving forward every day. I mean, there's even a movement called, I think it's effective accelerationism. Basically, it just means that technology is going to move forward whether you want it to or not at this point. It's somewhat of a perpetual engine. And so, you know, somebody's got to be doing that, you know, for you guys. And I think previously you didn't really have a partner that could do that, you know, didn't even have the capacity to do that. They were trying to keep up with the day, you know, mm-hmm. whereas I think we've gotten past that point. And like Elena said earlier, now it's just how do we fully grasp the opportunity that's in front of us? And what are the steps that it takes to do that? And those are the things that I'm excited to be working on over the next 12 to 24 months.
We're excited to have the guy with us that can do that, that can help us, that sees the vision that we see, that is 100% in on the vision that we see, that has the capability, the knowledge, the understanding to go forward. You are never going to be the best person or the best person to execute on any scenario unless you surround yourself with others that are just as good or better than you are.
Yeah. I've even run into situations in the past with technical leadership that would not hire someone that was better than them. And you can just see the effect that happens on an organization when you are always hiring a derivative of the next person. Not to say I'm superlative in any way. I just really love what I do, you know, and enjoy it. And it happened to find the intersection of somebody that had a really good business problem to solve with technology, and that's Secure. I mean, it's an exciting spot to be in because I think payments are only going to continue to get exaggerated within our economy over the next, you know, 10 years. There's going to be new technology that pops up. AI is going to affect a bit of this, especially, you know, as operationally efficient as we focus on. We will for sure integrate artificial intelligence in some aspects of our products so that we can continue to provide the best solutions for our customers. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens over the next, you know, 5 or 10 years in payments, because the last 10 or 15 years feels like it's been an up and to the right, as well as with bumps. There's no doubt there's been bumps, that, you know, legacy technologies phasing out of these systems and new technologies coming in where people want their money faster. I mean, even before they're maybe even due the money.
But, they want to get paid for the transaction today that's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, they want the minority report of payments, right? The precog payment. but yeah, I think there's so much going on in this space. And there's nothing, like, the thing I can tell you this is there's nothing in AI or any of the future machine learning stuff that's going to – slow down the movement of money within our system. If anything, it's just going to exaggerate, you know, the need for your partner in payments to be understanding of the technology that they've actually been built on, as opposed to just reselling someone else's payment processing or technology. And so I think that, you know, you guys are just in the right spot at the right time.
There's a lot of fear out there about, you know, things are changing and the model is changing and how do I fit into this new environment? And gosh, I'm the opposite. I see it all as just new opportunity. Things are changing, yes. And there's a new way that we can fit into this and solve problems in different and better ways rather than maybe not the same way as yesterday. But I think there's huge opportunity. So I don't think that we should be so pessimistic about the outlook of payments. I think it'll be big opportunity for anyone who's willing to do the work and stay current on the way things are changing. And that's going to be heavy on the tech side. And so that's why I think it's great that you're on board with us to help us keep current with what are the options that we have to stay current with our platform.
Yeah, I mean, in these moments, what's interesting is that anybody that's considered maybe a small player or someone that is not necessarily the largest industry leader, the thing I've learned about working with large enterprise businesses is they move so slow. I mean, most of the time they would bring me in because they wanted us to act as a completely separate entity from them so that we could move fast and outside of the hierarchy of these businesses. And in the context of what we're doing in payments, I mean, there are some large, very slow, belabored incumbents. And in these moments of change, there's an opportunity to become one of these larger players that's more agile because we've got the ability to be able to be adaptable to the environment as it's changing, as opposed to a lot of these enterprise businesses. They have too many people. I mean, I worked with a business, you know, over the last 10 years that business had, I think, 50 to 100,000 employees. And when you've got that large of a footprint, making a small change becomes very, like the cascading effects of those things are very, very big. And that one even also had a regulatory environment to it that was even, it was different from the payments regulatory environment. And so all of those things play against any large business from being able to be agile and fast. And so I think that's, again, another one of the advantages that we have is that, you know, we're a smaller organization, but we see the opportunity. And now it's just, hey, can we move faster than the incumbents are moving? And I think I'd bet on us every time in that scenario.
That was one of the things I loved about having you in these meetings at the ETA as we're talking about new ways to partner with either clients or vendors, and they're offering, you know, add-on services to the things we already do. You are there with, yes, we can do this, and this is how we do this, and this is how we move forward. Whereas Kevin and I might just say, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I have no idea how we're going to do that. But yes, we'd love to do that. And that's a different conversation. When you have the person there that has the solution as to how we're going to move forward with this in the room at the same time, then it's a real conversation. And it feels much more exciting and productive because it's something that we actually can do and we know that we can do it together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was fun because, I mean, for me, being more of a product oriented person than anything, sitting down in front of customers is the most important thing because either an existing customer or a potential customer will tell you what the most important things are to them. And if we can solve those problems at a very high rate, then we're going to solve those problems for not only the existing customers that we have, but the top of funnel new customers that are coming in. And as a product person, if you're not having conversations on a daily or weekly basis with your, not just your top customers, you know, a pretty randomized sample of your customers, then it's really, really, really difficult for you to tailor a solution that actually fits their problem or solves their fits their need or solves their problem. And so that's, I love that about ETA because, you know, you get an opportunity to sit down with a lot of your customers in a, you know, a dense time frame and really hear a lot of feedback quickly. And we came back with things like, hey, we got to do this. We got to go implement this. We've got to execute on this. And these things will open up opportunities for our customers here, you know, and that's a exciting moment for me.
Yeah, it helps us prioritize our project list and then also be excited about that project list. It's not just a checkbox of things that we know that we have to get done. It's we know we are going to surprise and delight this person by doing this. And let's go get it done so that we can do that, because our goal, of course, is to keep the clients happy.
Yeah.
Billy, I would love to hear your perspective. You know, I don't want to say an outsider because you've been here for a minute now, but just newer to the industry. What are the trends that you're seeing? Where do you see these going?
Yeah, I think a good bit of what I see and what, you know, we're going to be focused on is, I think over the next 24, 36, 48 months, going to be some disruption in the API-oriented payments world. So, you know, thinking ISVs or technology partners that integrate payments directly within their system or determine that they need to monetize as a part of their revenue structure, their payments flow and their payments volume. With Stripe potentially going public, I think that it will cause them to incur another set of regulatory concerns that will create an opportunity for businesses. I also think that one of the things that I've seen recently with, you know, PayFac coming up as much as they have, and other payment styled services like embedded payments coming out, I think what we've seen is that Stripe is not the only option for doing payments online and in your software products. And it also doesn't fit every solution needed, and there's some rigidity there. And there's a bunch of products coming out that are attempting to displace different aspects of the incumbents that don't work well enough for them or don't offer them the level of flexibility that they are looking for. And so I think that's one of the biggest opportunities that I see, is that I think there's going to be some bifurcation in how ISVs do payments over the next few years. And I think there's some opportunity there where someone can come in and offer a better solution at a better rate and create business alignment with those underlying customers, such that you engender yourself with those customers and you have better opportunities to expand and create, again, client advocates or customer advocates. Another thing that I've seen is a lot of the movement away from you know, hardware per se as the only method of intaking payment. You know, we've all got these beautiful, intelligent smartphones in our pockets that coming up pretty soon, some of the new hardware that's going into them will be able to run localized artificial intelligence. And having such a powerful device in your pocket only leads me to think that the future of payments really looks, you know, somewhat more like peer-to-peer style payments and business-to-business or merchant-to-peer style payments. And anything that we can do to support, you know, those movements, I think will create, again, more opportunities for businesses to inject loyalty, create more community within their underlying merchant body, and really is, again, going to provide a lot of opportunity for ISOs, wholesale ISOs, registered ISOs, just everyone that already is in the payment space that, you know, may look more brick and mortar than digital. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity there for us to be able to interact with software providers and groups that are distributing software to encourage their merchants and payments to have a better kind of quality of life within their product life cycle.
And when you have all those bundled services, it makes that business so much stickier, because now you're providing an overall experience and not just the payments piece. And attrition is something that this industry has struggled with for a lot of reasons, a lot of obvious reasons to me, because we seem to, you know, just treat merchants like a commodity and bundle them up and just, you know, force rate increases and whatnot. Like they don't have needs and we're not bring them. Instead, we just see them as an asset on the balance sheet, and that it's going to stay there and it's never going to leave. But once you start actually giving them this whole experience And again, it goes back to business processes. Now we're filling in their business processes for them and helping them grow their business. We're helping them grow revenue. We're helping them save time. When you look at it like that and not just a payment, then it becomes a much more meaningful relationship between merchant and ISO.
I was also going to say, one of the things that was very eye-opening for me that Billy taught us was early on, I remember us sitting down and talking about, you know, Stripe and guys are integrating into Stripe and there's larger companies integrating into Stripe. It's just racking my brain because me as the old school ISO payments guy, hey, Stripe is, everybody complains about the customer service. Their statements are horrible. You know, they don't do any super fast funding things or anything like that, but they're just getting these people to come to them in droves. And I'm not completely understanding what is driving that. And to have Billy sit across from me and go, Kevin, it's because they don't talk to the CFO. They don't talk to the CEO. They put out an API and the CTO or the even lower than that, the programmer who's responsible for building out the payments infrastructure goes, ooh, look, this takes 10 minutes. Bink, 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 hits a couple of things on the keyboard and implements it. And that's how it gets implemented. They're not arguing over price. They're not arguing over is the statement good. They don't give a shit whether or not the customer service is wonderful. Getting integrated because they went straight to the developer at the organization, instead of going from the top down, they almost went kind of straight into the middle of that organization. And that's how they're getting this large penetration. And I'm going to be honest with you. I had to step back. I mean, this is one of the few times where Billy, I really had to step back and go, ooh, that was an aha moment for me. Mm-hmm. It was just so out of left field and looked at things so differently than we have looked at them in the past. That is a customer interface, customer experience that is a different customer experience than we're used to understanding in the past, that I think we have to understand moving forward. And that's the kind of things that I think you bring to the table that for me are just so exciting to get me to look at things so differently like that.
Yeah, I mean, as a software engineer, a lot of times what we want to do is we believe that the thing that we're building, the core business, whatever that piece of software is working towards, is the entirety of the business. And then everything that we integrate with should only be a component of it. And that component should be kind of like, you should be able to almost like a la carte pick it up off the shelf, right? And I should be able to understand it well. I should know how to implement it. And I think that's what Stripe did really, really well. I mean, really what they did was they put out great documentation. They had an intuitive API, and they really targeted developers directly. One of the things that they did by doing that is they cut out a lot of the middlemen in this conversation and then was able to extract the maximum amount of value from their underlying customer. And so when I look at what you guys have and what you guys are working with, I say, well, this is more flexible. It has more opportunities to create customization within your payments flow. But now all we have to do is kind of bolt on APIs. And you know, those are the things that we've been working on to get ready for being able to engage with a bunch of these, you know, ISVs and make sure that we meet with their needs. And along the way, the existing ISVs that we have, we're having conversations with and saying, okay, what are the first things you need? Like, what's the first thing that we can get to? We can't get you the whole thing all at once, but we can get you the first thing. And I think that's the natural kind of progression of how these things should work. But that's not actually intuitive to a lot of people. A lot of people don't like look at, oh, well, all Stripe did was go out and create target developers. And because most of them aren't implementing these systems. You know, when you've implemented Stripe 20 times for 20 different customers, not only do you understand the pain of it, but you also understand the fact that you don't have anybody that you can talk to. You have to depend on whatever documentation exists or whatever external documentation third-party developers have said, hey, this is how you can do this thing with the API that they don't explicitly tell you, you know? And then it never maps to the business solution itself, right? Like you as the engineer are always having to come to the table with the business solution itself and say, does this tool fit my business solution? And I think that we're starting to see inside that world that it was somewhat single purpose. It was somewhat opinionated in the way that it wanted things to go. And there's a lot of other options and opportunities that these ISOs, wholesale ISOs, or even ISVs have that may not fit within those standard workflows. And again, like I said, I think there's a bunch of opportunities in this space for software. And it is an advantage that I know how to read API documentation.
That's good, because neither do Elena nor I know how to. We were having the discussion just the other day about, you know, what do you mean webhooks? They're just APIs.
Again, the intersection of these two languages matters a lot, you know, and
we're learning. We're learning.
And that's the thing is, I think I told Elena, she had a speech the other day at ETA, and she kind of direct quoted me on some stuff. I was like, yes, that's exactly right. I was
I'm picking up something. Something is sticking with me.
Yeah, it's sticking. This is good. So.
Well, thank you, Billy. This has been really fun. It's been I mean, you've only been on board with us less than a month. I think we have accomplished so much already in that few weeks that you've been on board with us. So I can only imagine if we're, you know, sitting a year from now, what that's going to look like. I'm super excited about it. Obviously, Kevin's super excited about it. We also have a lot less stress on our plate now because we know we have, you know, someone not only competent, but forward thinking and passionate about the business that we've built and the plans that we have with it. So we could have asked for more. So we're super thrilled to have you on board with us.
Well, thank you for having me on the podcast today. And I'm excited to do another couple episodes sometime soon, getting into the details of really what we're executing on the technology side and opening up opportunities for ISVs to integrate with us.
Well, Billy, thanks again for coming on. I know that you do your own kind of podcast stuff on the side. If you want to throw that out there, let people get to know who you are. I mean, that might be a great way for them to get to know you a little better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll do that. I haven't put out any episodes anytime soon, but you can kind of follow me on the onlines everywhere. Go hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm just Billy Boozer on LinkedIn, and I'll share something there at some point in time, more in depth about who I am.
Sounds good. Thanks, Billy.
Thank y'all.
That wraps up this episode of Payments Ground Game. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others or leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.